How are you, AJ?
I'm okay. I've had a bit of a rough time recently, just like physically. Like, I had like a really bad neck, and then like my back went into spasm just as my neck was getting better. And then, like, you know, a couple of times in there I was also like throwing up or like falling down the stairs or cutting myself really badly when I was shaving, so that like bleeding for several days.
I'm so sorry.
So I've just had lots of little compounding ailments.
Oh no.
But like emotionally I feel okay. Like,
well,
you know,
that's something.
There are definitely times when I've been depressed.
Uh-oh, you cut out. Oh no, uh-oh.
Hello.
Hi, welcome back.
Hi.
So there's certainly times that you've been depressed.
Yeah, sorry. I only realized after like a minute that you couldn't hear me. so yeah, there's definitely like, I've definitely had moments of depression and stuff like that, but I think generally I've been good in that sort of way.
Glad to hear it.
Yeah. How are you? How have you been? How's your time?
Yeah, hard to say, because it has been several weeks since we've recorded.
Yeah, okay, here's something that's probably worth to say, just since this is on the record, is that we recorded a bank of four episodes so that we'd have a backlog, and then we put out four, and then as soon as we started putting them out, we just, like, weren't able to record, like, at
all.
We
should have waited. But that's okay.
Yeah, that's okay. So it's been... Shit, that must mean it's been 5 weeks since we recorded the last one.
Oh, fucking hell. Well, that's cool.
That's cool.
And I haven't done very much reading of other things in those 5 weeks' time, so that's cool.
I have.
You have.
But it took, you know, I only finished this chapter last week.
Well, can I ask what else you've been reading? Because that's really interesting, and I think it's interesting for our listeners as well.
Okay. Well, ages ago, I ordered pre-ordered some books from, I think they're called Dog Print Press or Dope Press. So I just got like a little book on abolishing the police, a little book about environmentalism in Rojava, and also got a little book on like historically significant anarchists. So it just gives you like a little bio of each one of them and like what their important contributions were and what sort of areas they tended to work in and why some people don't like them and, you know, stuff like that. So that's been cool. I feel like I also started reading some... Oh, I was reading... I was reading Mao's On Contradiction. But then the ADHD got away with me. And I think I was, like, not even... I was only on to, like, the second or third part of it, because it's split in... It's only short, but it's split into, like, six little parts. And... Yeah, but like by the time I'd got it's all talk. This we've had a bit of a conversation over text about this, I think, but like it was all it's essentially a discussion about like the philosophy of like the Marxist philosophy of the dialectic and stuff like that, and you know, and then I got from reading that I was just like, oh. You know what? I think I need to figure out, like, as I understand, like... I don't know whether it was because I was, like, trying to think of a way to apply the thing I was reading about so that I could help, like, anchor it. But I was like, oh, I suddenly need to do a search for dialectics and Schrodinger. Like, because, I don't know. And then, you know, which led me... to downloading like three different papers and reading the big long article about dialectics and science, and I haven't finished any of those either. So I've been reading lots of stuff, but not really finishing anything.
I did
finish this chapter, but
you did do it.
It was a week ago, and I don't have the book in front of me, so I'm going to be going off of like a little summary for this episode.
Yeah, I feel like I really admire that you're doing that amount of reading. I think it's very cool. And I think it's very difficult. I don't underestimate it.
It's really hard. Oh, I'm only doing this reading because I've done no uni work. I'm like several I'm like several weeks behind on uni work.
Uh-oh.
And I've got an assignment that's due in 15 days, so I need to catch up.
Okay, so no podcast after this for a little while either.
No, it should be. I'm technically on break from uni this week, okay. but I'm going to be doing the work anyway because I'm behind.
Yeah. Oh, it's so tough.
What have you been up to?
I've been like having mental health problems, I have also been trying to schedule and record a little collection of poetry for radio that's going to be produced by the you know, extremely not biased BBC.
everyone in this country's favourite broadcaster, the British.
The one that's not political.
The one that's unbiased and factual in all of their reporting. Mm-hmm.
But they're putting my trans poetry on the radio, so that's nice to
me. Hell yeah.
And I'm getting money from it, so that's also nice.
Hell yeah, double nice.
Hell yeah, double nice. So that's been exciting, but I've been stressing out. I actually don't know what I've been doing. I think mostly it's just like a lot of nothing.
That's so relatable, don't worry.
I'm like, I'm so busy, I'm so stressed, and I look back at what I've been doing, and it's like literally nothing.
Oh no, I mean, that's the thing though, is like, stressing about something is an active.
Yeah.
And it, like, I don't know, it can be hard to do other things when you're also doing that.
I think so. When you're worried about all the things that you're not doing.
When you're worried about the thing that you have to do and also about the fact that you're not doing it because you're worried.
Yeah.
That can make things worse sometimes, actually.
Honestly. We haven't introduced ourselves. I just remembered that we do that. So I'm Ray. My friends are they and them. Well, thank you for coming to our beautiful podcast. Welcome to the book club. We're allowed to have thoughts.
Hi, I'm AJ. I use they or she pronouns. And yeah, I'm just going to co-sign everything Ray just said. Not an original to contribute.
Thanks. AJ, do you have a name of the week this week?
Oh, what's my prompt?
I should have thought of a prompt. What would your name be if it was... I had an idea, but it's kind of a hard idea to do, so it might be mean to give it to you.
I can do a hard one. It might just take me a minute of thinking about it.
Okay. What would your name be if it was the, like, if you were, like, a plant and it was your Latin name?
Fucking hell. I don't know Latin, so...
Do you want a different one?
No, I went to, like, an all... like a single-sex Catholic high school. and our language options were, like, we did some Spanish, then we did a little bit of French, then they let us do, like, one term of Latin to see if we,
I did a couple years of Latin.
Oh, no. Well, see, they let us, like... try it to see if we wanted to pick it for GCSE.
Oh, right,
and,
yeah.
And but like, I picked it for GCSE and they didn't let me in, so I had to do French and Spanish.
Oh no. Very cool of them to do. We could have had a classicist right here.
Yeah, I could be speaking Latin. Imagine.
the days gone by. Okay.
I could have an undead tongue right now.
You could do fake Latin.
A pig Latin. I can't really pig Latin AJ considering.
No. Oh, okay. Let's narrow it. What would your name be if you were a plant?
If I was a plant. This one's hard because I like a lot of plants.
Mm-hmm.
I have two flower tattoos.
Oh.
I have a rose and I have a hyacinth.
Hyacinths are so pretty.
I think, like, unequivocally, they're, like, my favourite they're my favourite flowers.
Hmm.
But I don't know if rose is, like, too easy.
It's a cute name.
I like rose. Guess,
yeah. It's very different to your other names, but that's kind of fun. It's kind of spicy.
I do have a cousin called Rosie, though.
Oh, okay,
And her mum named all of her daughters after flowers.
Oh, that's a cute thing to do. Okay.
So it's like, because of my family, if I'm going there, I kind of have to, like, you know, try and find the untrod ground. So maybe it's just Hyacinth. Maybe I'm Hyacinth.
Hyacinth is a very cool name.
I love Hyacinth.
I like that.
Did you know so Hyacinth, myth, like according to like ancient Greek mythology, was the first ever gay man?
Hell yes.
Yep.
I just can. Sorry, I was looking up Abolishing the Police by the Dog Section Press. And that's it. Can you read this for free? I think you can read this for free.
Can you? Okay, well, I pre-ordered hardbacks like a while ago and they only just came. I think I pre-ordered them like a year ago at least.
Oh, wow.
It was right when, it was right when like the protests were kicking off last year.
Mm-hmm.
So it would have been just over a year ago now.
Yeah. No, you can read it for free. I don't know if you can read all of it.
Okay, no, well, I've got a copy, and if it's not available for free, I'll hook you up.
Yeah, I mean, we should put a link to it in our... Yes, thank you.
Yeah, show notes.
AJ, you're so kind.
It costs next to nothing to post someone a book.
But still, it's very nice. Okay, great. So, name of the week, done. Introductions, done. Fun banter, done.
We've got this podcast shit nailed down.
We're so good at podcasting. What did you think of this chapter of the book that we read, which is Richard of the Earth?
Well, my brain, which is very full and has definitely retained all of this, did enjoy the chapter a lot. But time has passed.
It sure has.
And I don't have the book in front of me. Yeah. And I'm really bad about taking notes.
That's okay.
Every time I try to take notes and fail.
I understand. It's very difficult. I'd love to know what you enjoyed about it, if you remember anything that you enjoyed about it.
Let's try and figure that out. So I've got a summary up here. It's a long summary, but it is a summary. So I'm just trying to like scroll through the summary to see if anything jumps out to me. Oh, okay, yeah, here we go. The part where Fanon starts talking about, he goes through like something we've touched on a lot by now is like the subject of the colonized intellectual and like what they go through in terms of like being educated from by the colonial system, which is imposing its power over them essentially, and like all of like the internal effects that has on you, like as we were saying last time, you know, that's something that's been covered extensively so far, but I think probably he goes into the most detail about it here, because he actually talks about like there being different stages and stuff. And he talks about in the third stage, this love for culture finally moves to a fight for liberation. The intellectual begins to write combat literature, revolutionary literature.
Fuck yeah!
Yeah, and it's very. I remember it being a cool like. It was something that like as an artist or like as a creative person, it was something that was like. Kind of confusing. It was a little bit confusing for me to read, it just in the sense of like, well, what do I do with this? Just because like I feel like sort of the moral of the story of this chapter in regards to like, you know, trying to create a national culture, like I don't know necessarily how this links up with like Mao's concept of cultural revolution and stuff like that, because I haven't done too much extensive reading on that, but you know, like when he's, I feel like the conclusion he ultimately comes to is like, hey, if you're trying to be a political organizer, then like, you know, you're gonna naturally want to make political art, but like if the only way, like in the colonized context, if the only way you can do that is to draw on the past, then you're not going to go anywhere new. And at the same time, he says, like, if you're specifically trying to like capture the spirit of the revolution, you're almost definitely going to fail. Like, and it talks about like how if you do the political work, then the political art will grow out of that naturally.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, great.
So what do I
But as a political artist, like, are you telling me to not do art, or are you saying just don't worry about it too much?
I feel like it's like, I found it very comforting, because I think that's how I had sort of interpreted it. It was like, don't worry about it too much.
Yeah.
Look at what's happening around you. Engage with the people who were in your life.
Yeah, which was definitely the primary thing about it. It was like, hey, less important than trying to capture the spirit of the revolution is being like present and active in the revolution. And like, I do feel like, you know, being like, having that presence and having that activity will, you know, if your goal is to capture some revolutionary spirit, then that's definitely going to be the most authentic way to do it, because like, you're going to have that spirit, you know what I mean? Like, you're part of it.
Yeah, I was going to say something and I've totally forgotten what it was, which is so helpful.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Nah, no, not your fault at all. I've got loads of notes as well, so that's fine. This is what I was going to say. When we were talking about, like, so what do we do as artists? Sorry. Weeks ago, you recommended, you linked me an article. It might be in the reading list. Let's have a look. You linked me an article about referring to this particular role as, like, a cultural thinker. And I was like, this is so drastically relevant to the chapter, and you haven't read the chapter yet, so it was just like this weird fun serendipity. Is it in show notes? Is it in general chat?
I don't think it's in the reading list. I looked in the reading list.
I'm gonna search for it. We should leave all this in.
I love when we leave all this in. it's my favorite thing.
We have like we have very different priorities.
Yeah, I just know that, like, I've seen a lot of people who are like, I've tried listening to a lot of podcasts, but, you know, like, people just, like, will talk over each other a lot, or, like, you know, they sort of, like, are just getting their bits in and not really engaging with the content, and it makes it a bit difficult for me to listen along, and I'm like, oh god, we've scared so many people away.
We're very charming, though.
We are very charming. We can win them round. Also, to be fair, I was just going to say very quickly, we do try very hard not to talk over each other. There's just a very unfortunate amount of lag on the calls, like, constantly. Yeah. And for some reason, it's like, way worse when I'm speaking to you than when it is that I'm speaking to friends outside the country.
I know. I've got really terrible internet, and the lag is always a super big problem. But I think it's okay.
I think it's okay.
So the article you sent me was called Cultural Worker, Not a Creative, and it's by Devin Springer. I found it super interesting. Do you remember much about it?
I don't even remember sending it to you.
Okay, cool.
I don't know when this was, but I've got no memory.
It's funny. It actually has Marco at the very beginning. But it is kind of about, and I'm half remembering it and I'm half reading it here. It's kind of about referring to people who do cultural work, which I don't even fully know what cultural means. But we'll talk about that maybe. Talks about thinking of people who do cultural work as workers rather than as creatives, because creatives is a really loose category that is kind of, it excludes people who don't specifically do creative work from being creative and having creative lives. And also, on the basic level, the use of creatives assumes there is a set class of people who have some natural talent towards creativity. Following this logic, we're led to believe that creativity, and thus creative labor, is something reserved for a few people. It made the case that, like, creativity could and should be native to all occupations and all fields, and, like, I'm losing my thoughts because I'm trying to read this at the same time as talk. but yeah, it's really interesting. I think we should link it as well. I'll put it in the server.
Okay.
So that people can read it and not have my limited interpretation of it. But it's really cool, and thank you for finding it.
No worries. Do you want to quickly link it in the show notes channel so we remember?
That's what I'm doing now.
Hell yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. So that's cool.
Yeah.
Hard to remember things.
It is very hard to remember things. So you said you're not sure what culture is. Do you want to get to that now or do you want to get to that later?
Let's get to that now. What do you think culture is?
Okay, so I was, after you just said that, I was thinking, so you know how I just said I started Mao's On Contradiction and haven't finished it yet?
Uh-huh.
Well, in On Contradiction, I'm gonna talk about it anyway, because it's already, like, opened up how I think of things a little bit.
Great.
So, do you remember a while ago when we were talking about, like, the base superstructure model thing?
Vaguely.
So it's
oh yes, I do remember. Yes, it was really interesting.
Yeah, so it's an idea in Marxism that it's essentially like the base of any society is like the labor relations. Like it's something's relation to labor and capital, basically. And then like how those labor relations are decided is like the base of society, and then everything else that grows out of that is considered like the superstructure. And you know, the things that grow out of that include like government, art, society, essentially. Like, because you know, with the understanding that like the relationships of production are gonna affect how things are produced primarily, so that will affect how like the entire culture is shaped. So like I think in that sense you could say that culture is the superstructure, or you could say like there's a lot of different ways to like describe culture though as well. When yeah. I was reading Mao, what I was gonna say a minute ago is he talks about in you know, in dialectics, he says that, like, I think the way he describes it is he says that, like, the contradictions are present in everything. And he says, like, the base of every form of life is its internal contradictions. And then all of the external contradictions are, I'm trying to think what you... Oh, He says that they're like the conditions. So like the internal contradictions are the base, and the external contradictions are the conditions. And I feel almost like culture is like the conditions of society, essentially. Like it's, you know, it's those conditional contradictions in terms of like obviously not only culture, like if we're being literal about it, because it's like literally all external contradictions, but I'm thinking like if you're thinking of like, you know, like the individual and society, if you're thinking of it as like an individual versus the collective, then like, you know, your development as an individual is always going to be primarily determined by your internal contradictions, by your base, but the conditions of what's around you will, you know, is what pushes the base. You can't come out the example that was given in Mao's work was that like if you heat an egg, it can turn into a chicken, but if you heat a but if you heat a stone, it's never going to become a chicken, because you're not starting with the same thing. So like I feel like in this scenario we are but the eggs and culture is the heat. does that make any sense?
That does make sense. That's a really interesting way of looking at it, because when I was reading this I was like, what is culture and what does France mean by culture here? And I kind of couldn't quite work it out. Yeah, because culture can refer to like so many different things, and to some extent it seemed like, okay, culture seemed to refer to the things that we make and the things that we do, like the things that we write, the things that we sing, the things that we sculpt, the things that we paint. But then also it was kind of like wider than that, and I dipped into a book last week. And I didn't read very much of it, and I didn't retain an awful lot of it. But the book was called Race, Culture, and Counseling. And I found it really interesting. It has a section about what we mean by culture. And I kind of only got as far as like the chapter explaining that culture refers to lots of different things and talking a little about culture's like etymological roots. But I guess it's like, it's the things we make and the things that come out of us and our lived experiences. And it's also the context that we, like, it makes us and we make it at the same time is sort of what I've come to, which is what you just said.
No, I think that's a good way of phrasing it, though, because I think even though I'm not entirely certain about my understanding of what, like, of how well I can define culture or anything like that, I do think it's important to think of culture as something which is made. Like, something which is produced actively.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think, like, I think also it's really important to recognize that words don't just mean one thing. Like, words mean things. Yeah.
But especially like, in, like, a political sense, when you have different ideologies trying to define things differently. And especially when it's gone through translation, like,
you have to be really specific.
Yeah, I've definitely heard people who speak French say you have to read Wretched of the Earth in French because it reads so much better.
I was thinking, actually, most of the time when I read this, but especially this time, I was reading it and thinking, I don't like this translation. I don't like this translation. I think it is sort of quite a gatekeeper-y translation. I think it uses language that it doesn't need to use, that I think keeps a lot of people out of the text. I think it makes things unnecessarily... I can have a look and see if there is anything, but a lot of it is in the way the sentences are structured. Like... Yeah, nothing jumps out, but it's like little stuff about how things are structured, about how things are put together, where they could be made a lot. And I don't think it's that things should be made simple for the sake of being simple. I think it's that things should be made, should be constructed so that they convey as much of the original meaning as possible in the most direct and digestible way possible. And that's not, I guess I want to make clear I'm not like being anti-intellectual or like saying that nothing should be complicated, but I think it is really important that it's not using this sort of gatekeepery language or this really dense construction that makes you sort of frown at it for about 5 minutes before you know what a sentence means, because often it does do that for me, and I don't think that's Fanon's writing. I think that's the translation.
Okay,
I'm being honest. I might be talking out of my ass completely.
I couldn't say, because I don't read or speak French, and I haven't read the original translation. But
me neither. But wouldn't it be cool too?
Yeah, it would be very cool too. Speaking of translation, we can cut this out because I'm not sure if you'll want to talk about it on the podcast or not. But it was just something while I remember it, I want to tell you. I was listening back to the podcast, to the last episode, episode 4, before I read the chapter, just so that, like, because it had been so long that I wanted to get myself back on track a little bit. And during that part, you were reading a passage and you said, oh, I don't want to say that word. I think it's a translation issue. But it was a word you didn't want to say. I'm also not going to say it. I think it was not the N word, but a N word.
No, it was, it's a word that in French, it just means like to go backwards, but in English, it's an autistic slur. So I didn't want to say it.
Oh, okay. I understand. All right. Okay, from the way you were saying it, I got that there were slayer vibes, so then I thought you might have been talking about the way he keeps using the other N-word, which was politically correct at the time, but I am definitely not going to say as a white person in 2021.
I would feel comfortable saying it, but I would not feel comfortable with you saying it.
Yeah, which is also like... the vibes it gives me of like, no, that's I feel like that's fine for people to say, but I don't feel like it's fine for me to say.
Yeah.
I feel like it's fine for white people to say.
Yeah.
Like we have the word black now. We can just say black.
We can just say black. I think that's fine.
It's used in the same way as well. Like I think that's why I thought that that's what you were talking about, because it's like a word which like you know, feels kind of racist now. Like, it feels racist now, even though, like...
Because it's so antiquated, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And, yeah, because it's like, why would you go to the effort of using the old word? What are you trying to communicate here?
Yeah, completely. Yeah.
Cool. Okay, yeah, sorry, anyway.
Yeah.
I don't know, yeah, tell me if I should cut that out or leave that in.
No, leave that in. I think it's an interesting discussion, right? Because, like, slurs are kind of interesting to talk about. And this particular instance, I think, was complicated because also it was about translation and it was about language. And this word that is, like, in that context, is not technically a slur. I'm just autistic and I don't want ever to say it or hear it.
Like, how, you know, if I hear someone on the street talking about a faggot of, like, sticks they've collected, I'm probably not going to assume that that's what they're talking about if I just hear them say faggot.
Like, yeah, I feel the fight or flight response.
yeah
totally. I was gonna say that this chapter fucking slaps and I love it.
I
think it was the one that I really, really liked it. I found it very easy to engage with, I guess because it was talking about something that is really close to me and, like, what I do. Because we're both artists, right? We're both people who make stuff, and also
we're cultural laborers.
Care about social change. Yeah, we're cultural workers.
We are.
And I don't know. It made me think about stuff that's, like, going on in my life right now. And it made me think about how things have changed. As in, like, I was thinking about culture and media, because the way that culture is made now is super different to how it was then. And I think in some ways, the people who get to make culture has broadened a lot. And then also it's still very narrow. And then also there is, like, cultural imperialism in it was there then, it is very intense and sort of unquestionable now, so it confuses all these things about having a cultural identity. I think,
like, I'm sure Disney was big in sure Disney was big in the 60s, but it wasn't what it is. it wasn't several different, like, multi-billion dollar franchises all owned under the one roof. It wasn't like it isn't one production company owning, like, 80% of the like movie market, I think, or, like, they at least, like, blockbusters wise, I think Disney Studios and all their subsidiaries produces 80% of the market, at least in America.
Yeah,
but, you know, that's, like, also very much exported, and a lot of the big films that they work on, specifically the Marvel films, they're funded to fuck by the CIA.
Yeah.
Like, that's why they get to use all that equipment. Yeah, it's all, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, they literally have to sign contracts that say that they will let the CIA consultant make changes to the script in order for them to be able to use military equipment for free, essentially.
Yeah. And, like, the way that culture, like, there's a really interesting part in this chapter about how I have notes about it, hang on. Because it was phrased in a really particular way. Maybe I'll just find it in the text. But I also want to use it to make a point, so give me a second. My notes are such a mess. And everything is underlined because it felt too important.
At least you have notes.
Hey. there was a discussion about in the chapter about African culture as sort of a monolith and then national culture as needing to be distinct because the circumstances in which every different nation or every different community operates are very different, and everybody's coming from different contexts and everybody has different circumstances and different problems and different challenges and different, like, things that they need to address for social change. And there is a sort of different circumstance now where culture is applied in like an extremely blanket way, and often culture sort of isn't given the potential to develop in very specific or individual or change in very specific or individual senses because of, like, you know, the way that American culture is global culture, and the way that, although often I think also throughout social media and stuff, pockets of like very localized specific culture does thrive, but that is in service to like somebody in America making a lot of money out of it. I don't know, kind of a confused point, but it's interesting to think about.
No, yeah, I mean, I think especially like where you started from there, especially like, is I think probably what like the most time is spent on in the chapter is like explaining both why people do and even why they should, to some extent, you know, use like a continental African framework to develop like cultural solidarity between all African people. But, you know, like we heard about in the last chapter when he was talking about like white and black Africa and stuff like that, like the whole the continent as it stands already has all these different contradictions going on in it. All these different nations have their own like different circumstances that they face, and like you can't, and but when you flatten yourselves into a continent, even if it's for the purpose of resistance, then what you're actually doing is playing into the racialized European logic.
Go on. I was going to say that there was, like, a really interesting observation of how, like, when culture is eradicated through, in the service of colonialism, through colonialism, and for colonialism to continue, it is done as a blanket. It's not done specifically. It's done without regard to culture happening differently throughout the continent. Is just like, oh, this is black people culture, we're going to destroy it, right? So it makes sense that people's response to that is to attempt to strive for like a united continental or like black culture. But then also the argument is made that, like, you know, the urge to do that makes sense because that's how it has been treated and that's how it has been destroyed and erased. But in by arguing that we're people because we have culture as a people, that's not going to change anybody's minds, you know? They're not going to get embarrassed because they respect us now. They're not going to stop being racist.
Yeah, yeah.
Just because we have some cool art that we did.
I think it's cool which... to... Sorry, go on.
Keep going.
No, I was just going to say, I think it's interesting as well to think about this, like what you were just saying about... culture being like intentionally destroyed in the context of the previous chapters as well. So then, like, when we think about when we think about how, you know, the you know, what may be called like the proletariat in the towns would also maybe be like middle class, upper middle class nationally when it comes to like the people who work in like the colonized cities and stuff like that. We talked about how, like, even though they are still far below all of, like, the colonizers who live there in the social order, like, they're also the people who profit most from them being there, just from, like, just from their proximity to capital. But also, those are the people, like, the proximity to capital also means that, like, there's the most potent destruction of national culture there. At the same time, which is like where a lot of the disconnect comes from. I think like that a lot of what was getting talked about in like the earlier in the book about like the agricultural rural versus, you know, more industrial urban populations was the like the you know, the urban native to the rural native is someone who's already coming from a different culture, because there is more of a continuity of culture in the rural areas than there is in the urban areas, because it's easier to destroy there since that's where capital in that country is centered.
Oh my god, and like, I love the way you said that. It's sort of, it's like, oh, I understand a thing better now, which is really cool. I think something that this chapter really like that I knew about and that I understood but I didn't have words for, and that this chapter spoke to in a really cool way, was like how the alienation and desperation to connect to something that we feel as like Black people, Black diaspora people who have like been detached from quote unquote our people, whoever they are, whatever that is, the desperation that we feel to connect to something, to have people and to do something sort of with them or for them, leads us to kind of ape this like tradition, this traditional culture, and also strive for this Black culture. And the need to do that is, again, super understandable, but not helpful whatsoever or at all. But also, and I have kind of always wanted to avoid doing that, but I have found myself doing it in the past. Like, right, and the thing that you get shown now is Black American culture. But also, you know, I still do feel this like massive alienation and desperation, because it's like, what do I connect to? What culture is mine? What, you know, what can I say? This is my culture. This is my context. This is what I can participate in. I fully do not know. Is that a Black thing specifically, or does everybody have that now that culture is sort of like weird and floating around?
that's what I was going to talk. I was actually going to mention then, hearing you say that, because like, whereas I think there is a very unique Black experience within this because of like African colonialism, or maybe Black and Indigenous is better to say, because you know, whereas there's a specific anti-Blackness that is obviously very present, there's also like a lot of the practices found here were also used against other non-Black Indigenous people.
Of course.
But, you know, but there, I feel like there is a very specific experience of, like, what it feels like to be a colonized person whose, like, culture has been intentionally destroyed like this. But I don't necessarily think that, like, the yearning for the culture and, like, looking back specifically to do that is something that's unique to Black people, because, like, we can see that happening all over, and we also see it in Europe. It often gets linked to racism. Like, you know, like, I think... Was it Le Pen's party or whatever in France who, like, when they first started coming up in, like, the 80s and 90s, they were very much linked to, like, a Celtic reconstruction, like, a racist Celtic reconstruction movement, where, like, they were trying to, like, bring back all the old Gaelic gods and stuff like that. But and, like, you see the same thing now with, like, a lot of people who call themselves Odinists or Aesir. And it's like, well, no, you're Nazis and you want to be able to feel spiritual about being Nazis.
Yeah.
Like,
very cool.
Yeah, but then I know that there's also, like, currently, there's a Celtic Reconstructionist movement going on, which is, like... which, like, there's a book downstairs that Darcy has. Maybe we should ask Darcy about it at some point.
That would be really cool.
I'll ask Darcy to do a book report. like, in there, like, they did, like, I don't know if you'd call it a manifesto or just, like, here's us explaining what we consider ourselves to be doing as a movement of academics and stuff. Where they, like, specifically talk about how, like, hey, we are anti-racist, we are anti-colonial. These ancient spiritual practices are things which are often misrepresented and used to justify racism and colonialism. We are like, we are trying
to... It's like a really cool book.
Yeah, and they were basically being like, we want to find, like, as accurate a picture of what was going on in the past as possible, like, specifically so that it can't be used in these ways, so it can't be used for, like, modern prejudices. I think like part of that book is like they talk about like when the Romans showed up, the Irish were like offended that none of the men wanted to have sex with them, you know, like stuff like, because the Romans brought homophobia. You know,
wow.
But but at the same time, reading this chapter made me think of that, because, like, it, once again, this is talked about in terms of, like, in the colonial context, but Fanon very much is like, hey, we can, like, look to the past, we can look to the past, but we need to remember that what we need to do is create something new, because...
And it reminded me of something that you said, sorry.
No, go on.
It reminded me of something that you said a while ago, like in this sort of context of like, there is no going back, there is only going forward. And I feel like that is super central and super important and super interesting.
Yeah, I think that was one of those things that I like... I can't remember if it... You remember, before we started this podcast, when I read, like... when I read the Xenofeminist Manifesto, and then over the course of, like, several months, managed to make myself read the Cyborg Manifesto. Like, there were a couple of things in that that, like, genuinely changed the way I think about stuff. And, like... And that is one of them. Like, the notion that you can't return to things. You only, like...
Yeah, as they were before.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say something about, like, I feel like for me, and this isn't the case for all people who are, like, in sort of diaspora, colonized, have that experience, but what feels like the difference between that desperation and that yearning to have something that you can call your culture is, like, the sense of entitlement, because... It's like, if I see anything that I potentially could have claim to, I feel like there is no way that I could ever actually claim that thing. And some people, you know, they do, the importance for them is like, I'm claiming this, I'm situating myself in the world, I'm fighting against this thing inside me that says like, no, you can't have anything, you can't fit anywhere, you can't like contextualize yourself, you're not like meant to exist. Whereas, like, what I often observe, I don't know if this is actually the feeling or the case, because it's not my experience, with white people in those situations where they're like, I need to belong to something, is that sense of entitlement to, like, yeah, I'm Celtic, you know, yeah, I worship the god Thor. Yeah.
Because, like, white people... Because whiteness exists now, basically. Like, so, like, white people don't... Like, you know, I think, if anything, I feel like this is something that white people... I think I don't remember if it says this in this book or if it's something I read elsewhere recently, but I definitely remember somewhere being like, oh, white people like also feel this way because whiteness has robbed them of a national culture. Like,
I think about that a lot. I haven't read it anywhere, but I think about it a lot.
Yeah,
sorry,
like,
keep going. I just got excited.
No, yeah, just like, you know, when whiteness was constructed and like more and more people were brought into it and considered white to the point where it's like, you know, generally it can't, like, it's generally just like a colorism these days, but also obviously goes beyond that because there are still people who, you know, may look white or light skinned or whatever, but, you know, like, aren't like on paper at least, like, you know, but that's a very complicated question and probably not one I should be interrogating right now.
But yeah, I think colonialism and white supremacy does rob white people of culture and of like the nuances of their culture and like specific things about cultures that used to exist. Thank you. Yeah, specific things about cultures that used to exist because they don't fit into that framework that sustains white supremacy. And I think it's, like, fucking... It's heartbreaking, you know? No wonder people are desperate. No wonder people are trying really hard for these things that, you know, in turn are often used to prop up white supremacy. But you can see where this all comes from, right? Like, it just gets crushed in the... As white supremacy forges ahead.
Yeah, I think it's like so transparent as well when you look at like the history of Britain. Like, like not even necessarily outside of Britain. Like, not even like Britain's colonialism, but like if you just look at the British Isles, not that there isn't colonialism within the British Isles, but you know, like if you look at the history of it, it's just, well, here's all these different European tribes invading each other over and over again until, you know, bigger and bigger empires come in until, you know, can't really get any bigger and then we start invading everywhere. You know, I've heard people say it makes sense that Britain became one of the world's biggest colonizer, even though they were just a tiny island, because, like, because it... it was like,
yeah,
it was like a hotbed of colonization. You know?
Yeah, I haven't like thought about that before, but it makes complete sense. Like, yeah, wow.
Yeah, I was just thinking about it in terms of like, because, you know, it's not at all the same thing as like the absence of continuity within blackness, because that's something that was done alongside the creation of whiteness. They come from the same place, but it's much more violent towards a certain group of people, obviously.
But I think it's like, it's worth acknowledging. It's super worth acknowledging. And I think, you know, like the fact that slavery has an enormous part in the like alienation from any culture that black people have is like super significant. And then also at the same time, I think we can hold in our minds that for white people, that cultural destruction also happened. It left them in a position of supremacy, but also was like deeply painful, deeply damaging. Like, I think those two things can be true and can be different and can not be compared to each other at the same time. I think it's really important to do that.
And I also think it's maybe important to say that, like, even as culture is being destroyed, a new culture is being created around the destruction of that culture. Like you're just thinking about slavery, like, I think like slavery really has like affected everything about how our world is formed. And I think, you know, it's, you know, hot take, obviously, you know, but like, it's something where it's like, you know, obviously reading things like this and also having the conversations I'm having these days compared to the ones I've had historically, it's something I'm thinking about more and more, even in things that like don't necessarily seem connected. Like, you know, I'm a big wrestling fan. Well, I saw Sam from Southpaw podcast, which is like a left-wing MMA podcast, post like tweeted recently about like he's done loads of research into the subject basically, and was being like, he was talking about how mixed martial arts were created like in response to the slave trade, and about how like, you know, a lot of people know, like, think of capoeira, you know, like the Brazilian martial art, which is often like the story about that is always that it was like slaves in Brazil had to figure out a way to practice martial arts so that they could hide it within a dance. So like that's the story behind it, but Sam like said that, like, based on his research, that was actually something that was already being developed in Africa in response to the slave trade before anyone was taken to Brazil. That's so really like there's a continuity there from the continent to the colonized places. And there was more to it than that that he was talking about as well. But but you know, I've recently been thinking of it a lot because I'm a pro wrestling fan. A lot of pro wrestling comes or like has a lineage linked to Lancashire Catch as Catch Can wrestling, which came about roughly in like the mid 1800s. Like, people speak about it as if it's a much longer like back thing, like it's the folk tradition of the area, but it actually wasn't the folk tradition of the area. It was it was a new professional / semi-professional form that grew out of that came during the time when Lancashire was like going under mass industrialization and producing over 80% of the world's cotton from the slave trade. So like,
that's fascinating.
So now I'm thinking about like, would we even have like, not that it's like the most important question related to the slave trade, obviously, but I'm just like, would we even have like pro wrestling as we know it without fucking slavery? You know what I mean? It's so weird to like have, you know. Obviously, I'm saying this as a white person, but like, it's very weird to like have to look at every single different aspect of culture and think about how it's been influenced. But like, how the world works, though.
And no matter what your context is, you're like trained not to notice these links, not to think about it. I wanted to ask you what your relationship was to culture, like how you felt about it, because I'm curious. Like, if you feel connected, if you feel disconnected, if you feel like you're looking for something, if you feel desperate, if you feel isolated,
I feel extremely disconnected from any sense of national culture.
Yeah, same.
I don't feel any relation to a national culture whatsoever, to be honest. Mm-hmm. Which is something that needs to be worked on. Not because I need to have some great idea of what this nation could be, but also, you know, like, if you're a socialist, that's everywhere. You know, it's like, that does include here, and like, you know, nothing's gonna ever fucking get done if we sit at the sides disconnected. But at the same time, British culture is so fucking painful and hard to navigate.
It is really very painful. It's very cruel, I think, to everybody who participates in it.
It's extremely fucking cruel. Like, you know, people have always joked about, like, how depressing it is to turn on the news and stuff like that.
Mm.
But, like, literally, if you sit down and turn on the news, like, even getting, like, even if you're okay with, like, having to be constantly critically engaging with, like, what's the propaganda angle if here versus, like, what are the facts I know versus, you know, like, how are they presenting it?
Yeah.
Even when, like, if you're cool with, like, filtering it through all that and putting the effort in, it's still just fucking depressing.
It's awful. It's awful, like,
they're still just telling you about, like, here's the bad things that are happening. Good job we've got the police. Like, that's essentially it. Like, even when the bad things they're reporting on are, like, the police killing people and shit like that, it's still, like, they're
essentially... What about more police, though?
It's, like, the news is essentially, as well as a propaganda, it's just a scare tactic at this point. Like,
I completely agree with you. Like, I've been feeling this real sort of urgency, but I haven't done anything about it. About, like, you know, I need to recognize the fact that I live here. I grew up here. I am here. There needs to be some kind of, you know, my work needs to center around the fact that I'm recognizing that I'm alive and I'm here. And that, like, there's something to be invested in here. There's something to care about and nurture and, like, celebrate here, despite all of the things that are, like, have been lost or that are really cruel or are really painful or are really difficult. Like, because nothing's going to change if I'm just pretending that I sort of don't really live in the world, or if I'm only really engaging with stuff that's somewhere else, which I think is what has happened. And it's really scary.
I think part of the reason I haven't got out to, like, a protest yet in the current, like, in what's going on right now, like, as well as, like, my COVID anxiety and, like, you know, just general anxiety and having all these responsibilities I need to catch up with.
And disability,
which are all factors. Like, as well as that, I think it's also just, like, I feel like I don't know enough about what's going on.
Yeah, same.
Which is, like, we can't let that stop us, but also,
yeah,
how do absolutely we stay informed and, then also, and connected, you know, without...
The way so many people stay informed is Facebook, and if I go on Facebook, I'll die.
Yeah, luckily I haven't had Facebook for years now. My head will explode. Seriously, deleting Facebook is, like, a good thing for your mental health, like, legitimately.
Yeah, and also Twitter.
Yeah, but I'm still on there because that's where my friends are.
That's where my podcasts are.
It's where my podcasts are too, yeah.
I mean, the thing is, like, all my friends were on Twitter, right? And I had to leave it because it was making me seriously, like, so unwell. And then when I left Twitter, it was like, you know, it was like this complete isolation. It was really, really hard. It was really difficult. So we, you know, we get trapped in these places that sort of artificially fill this need that we have for, like, genuine connection with other people, and that sort of separate us and abstract us from the things that, and people that are actually around us. And then when you leave them, you know, you're cut off from everything that is supportive and, like, your community that you have. It's really, really dire. It's really scary, it's
fucked. And, like, this is another one of those things as well where it's just, like, the monopolization under capital just, like, exaggerates all the contradictions, because, You know, like when the internet was first being popularized, it was like this great liberatory, like, oh, look, we're all, you know, everyone's outlook was thinking about all the different possibilities and all, you know, there were all these different forums and all these different sites that were disconnected from each other. And like now it's like, well, if you want to function in our society, you have probably have to be on Twitter. You probably have to be on Facebook. You probably have to use YouTube, maybe Twitch or whatever.
Participate in the outrage machine.
Yeah. And if you don't do that, good job on just not being a part of popular culture.
Yeah.
Because, like, that's where pop culture happens. Have fun not engaging with
society. And that's terrifying. That's and really, it's got some really negative consequences. And it's these companies that are in control of how it all works. Yes. Yes. And they stand to gain from, like, these really awful things being proliferated and not changing and having people, like, really do damage to themselves talking about them in a certain way.
It also terrifying. Just like intent it like encourages very, you know, because of the way the algorithms work, any engagement is considered good, which is just non-factual.
Terrifying.
So then, like, the way the systems are shaped are to, like, consider all stimulus a good thing.
Yeah.
And like that's, and it has, that's like, not life.
A massive effect. Yeah. It has an effect on our how we think, our brains, our responses to things. What was I going to say? Oh yeah, the Xenofeminist Manifesto actually made me feel a bit more hopeful about this, because it kind of talked about online spaces as like these sort of potential grounds for really big, like, radical new ways of having community and interacting with each other if we make them it somehow. And I don't know how we would do that, but it was really cool to see that still being considered as a possibility, because I think I had not felt hopeful about it.
I do want to talk about this more, but I'm wondering if I should just save it for when we have an episode on the Xenofeminist Manifesto, because we're probably going to.
Yeah, probably.
We can probably knock it out in one episode, because it's quite short. Even
I think that would be cool. Yeah, it's quite short. I have more things to say about this chapter.
Please say them.
Yes, I've written internalized racism down, and I kind of can't remember why. It was something really specific. Diaspora, Pan-Africanism and its flaws, alienation and desperation, internalized racism.
I was going to say, is that linked to the Pan-Africanism? Because, you know, he talks a lot about how, like, well, even in, like, the Pan-African conference, which it involved, like, continental and diasporic, you know, African people of African descent, it was still just like, oh yeah, but when we were there all together, even though we realized we have a common cause, we also realized that, like, what we actually need to do to address our needs depends too much on where we are specifically, and like we have to we're just fighting, even though it's all kind of the same fight, it's also specifically not. Like completely. Even though these things are all connected, there are different things that are happening in the world that need addressing differently,
and they need to be addressed differently by different people in different contexts. And I remember what I wanted to talk about, and it is sort of very personal and specific. I think that might just be my role in the podcast, where I just talk about myself.
That's fine.
But I think kind of is the most interesting thing I can do. Thank you. I'm allowed to have thoughts. But so this discussion about looking back and like African culture and using that sort of African culture to prove to colonial oppressors that we have culture, that we have dignity, that we're worthy of being considered like people as equals, and that, like, sort of needing to prove this, the visibility of this culture out of this kind of internalized racism where your dignity has been sort of contradicted and removed. There's an organization that I am sort of doing stuff with at the moment, called Origins, that is kind of in my town. It's like a group of Black people. We're sort of trying to do cultural events. It was around Black History Month, but we're doing stuff throughout the year this year, or trying to. And there has been a discussion, like, I found it really interesting how the things that France notices and criticizes in this chapter. It's the same shit that we're still doing. Like, the conversations that are happening right now are like, okay, the theme for this year is going to be about untold stories, and like, a lot of the people in the group want to do stuff about, like, okay, we're talking about Africa, and we're talking about African culture. And as much as I don't want to, some of the people in the group, like, they grew up in Africa, they are African, they, like, you know, have connections. And then a lot of us who are in it also, we have to address the fact that we live here. We have to address the fact that this is our context, and we have to build something for ourselves here. We have, and also there is no going back, right? Yeah, there are stories that are present time stories that we haven't told and that we can't tell and that we need to tell. So yeah, it just was like, my sister and I are kind of trying to have these conversations in the organization where it's like arguing for the same thing. Like, we need to start looking at each other. We need to have each other. The purpose of this thing needs to be for us to be able to connect with each other and feel like we are, like, fight the internalized racism that keeps us separate and that makes us feel superior to each other or not want to associate with each other. That needs to be the purpose, rather than proving to people that we have something to say, or we have some stories to tell, or that we have, that we're interesting. And often, I think my sister mentioned something about, you know, putting on these exhibitions, doing these poetry events, and the white people in the audience, you know, seeing in their faces, right, like, moments of recognizing, oh yeah, you're like people. And I don't think, you know, people can do that completely without knowing, without recognizing, without really thinking, because it's a very deep internalized thing, and it's not a conscious thing at all. Like, people could be there totally in support, totally with, like, the right ideas in their heads, but there's still that, like, we're kind of we're acting towards that response, which I really don't want to be doing. That's my thing that I wanted to say.
No, yeah, thank you. I mean, like, you know, when we talked about stuff last time, I think, you know, we said, like, it's good and important to, like, connect the theory to, like, what shit that's actually happening in our lives. Like,
yeah,
you need to, it's not enough to know the theory. It's, like, you have to apply it. So I think, like, you know, whereas it can be very frustrating that these are conversations that still need to be had in some circles, I think it's
so good. Frustrating.
It's good that you can be conscious of it and, like, actually, like, engage with, like, okay, so what's the decision I need to make here? How am I going to approach this?
We need to have some fucking chats about how, like, I mean, this chapter really helped me think about what I want to do in this organization, right? Like, in order to make stuff and do cultural stuff that is actually meaningful and is actually worthwhile, we need to have more engagement with, like, trying to do something politically, trying to change something politically. You know, like, there was even a discussion of whether or not we should use the word racism in our funding applications. And it's so depressing.
I mean, that's a whole other kind of worms, because it's funding. It's funding, so you don't know, like, there's always going to be an element of, like, how much of a song and dance have I got to do to get funding?
Exactly. And, yeah. But we need to fucking say it.
Yeah, like, yeah. I think it's, you know, it can be, this might just be a good way to, like, break the ice then, to, like, show that you're coming at it from, like, from, you know, people always feel the need to justify, no, I'm not being malicious in bringing this up, I'm trying to engage in good faith, but you can say, which is not me saying you need to do that, but I'm saying you can say, like, oh, I've been reading Wretched of the Air, you can say, I've just read On National Culture, and it's given me some thoughts about
yeah.
I mean, like, it's a genuinely good idea, though, because you can just say, like, you can bring up your concerns, and it's one of those things where You know, I feel like when you can attach it to theory, there's almost a sort of plausible deniability that probably shouldn't really be necessary. Of just like, I read this, so it's kind of like not really directly my thoughts, although it is allowing me to...
Fanon saying this.
Yeah, yeah. But also, Fanon said it and I listened. Aren't you going to listen to Fanon? I listened. but no, yeah, it could be a good way to bring it up because, like, you know, you can reframe the subject without excluding discussion on Africa. Obviously, like, I don't think that's not what you want. I don't think you want this to not be about. I don't think you were saying you don't want Africa to be the subject. I think you were saying like you don't want Africa to be it. You don't want it to be about, like, some past or present Africa that, like, you aren't necessarily as connected to as you are as, like, your current moment and location.
Because it is really vital that we do engage with the world that's around us and the people that are around us, rather than acting on this, like, dream of having something that can't exist anymore because of colonialism.
Yeah, I think instead of, like, connecting the past to... what could be, or like, you know, like, oh, we, like, this is what was once, like, maybe one day we'll do that again, or like could do that again, or like we at least now know that we have the capacity to do that because it already happened or whatever, like, I think, you know, I think it's much more useful to like try and look at history and then be like, okay, so now how can I understand what's going on through these past events? You know, as opposed to just being like, hey, I understand these past events, that's nice.
Fuck yeah. I mean, there is so much in this chapter that is worth reading. I realize we haven't read any of it, and I don't want to read a lot of it. But I do want to read, like, the quote at the beginning, if that's all right. There's loads of stuff I underlined, but fuck it. People can read the chapter. but I'm going to read this, which is from Sekou Touré, from the political leader as a representative of a culture, address to the Second Congress of Black Writers and Artists in Rome, 1959. So, to take part in the African Revolution, it is not enough to write a revolutionary song. You must fashion the revolution with the people. And if you fashion it with the people, the songs will come by themselves and of themselves. In order to achieve real action, you must yourself be a living part of Africa and her thought. You must be an element of that popular energy which is called forth for the freeing, the progress, and the happiness of Africa. There is no place outside that fight for the artist or for the intellectual who is not himself concerned with and completely at one with the people in the great battle of Africa and of suffering humanity. I read that without, in a way that fully showed that I was just reading the words and not understanding what they meant. But although it talks about like the happiness of Africa and one with the people in the great battle of Africa, it also, I think, addresses the fact that you have to engage, you know, with the people around you. You have to fashion the revolution with the people.
Yeah, it was a really cool way to open the chapter because it's very very much like, no, because it's like, it's kind of like a thesis statement, but also it's poetry.
Yeah. Yes, I think lots of this is very, very poetic. Oh, this chapter rocks. You should read it, listener.
if you're listening to us and you think, hey, I don't need to read books, I can just listen to these two fucking idiots who've read books, then...
It's just often what I think.
That's often what I think too. But I'm trying to change that because... I've listened to podcasts where people spoke about this book before, and they spoke about it probably in more detail than us, if not necessarily as drawn out as we have by doing an episode on each chapter. But you know, like, I feel like even hearing other people who probably explain things better talk about it, I've definitely benefited more from reading it than from hearing people talk about it.
My hot take is that there should be more audiobooks of theory.
I think there's like some projects that are going where people are doing that. Like,
that's very cool.
I think there's because there's several like communist and anarchist like online libraries and stuff like that. But I think there might be one where people are specifically trying to record audiobooks for socialist texts.
Yeah, I think that would be really cool.
Let me scrounge around for it, and if I find a link, I'll put it in the show notes.
That would be cool. We're going to have some very rich show notes for people to engage in.
Unless I don't find it.
This chapter whips. There's so much to talk about, but I think I'm done.
That's
good. How are you feeling about being done?
I'm feeling happy about being done.
Nice. Great. While you're looking for that link, I'll do my plugs.
I forgot. What is it I'm looking... Oh, yeah, audiobook. Sorry. I just needed to remember what the fuck I was supposed to be looking for so I could write it down so I don't forget.
That's okay. I have been Ray. My pronouns are they and them. I do other podcasts, which are... None of them are important. Or political.
I disagree on both counts.
We're a cult again. Thanks.
Yay! I was so happy when you became a cult again. You can't the feeling of relief that washed over me when the music came in. It made my evening. It was so good.
Just see, wait until next episode.
I can't wait to never believe it again.
Hell yeah, I never believe it as a podcast that gives me joy. We're doing some fun, funky stuff over there. We've gone through it. We've turned into a new phase where we don't give a fuck anymore because Sarah has a job now. And that's pretty cool.
You're not returning to the old cult, but you're creating a new cult.
We're creating a new cult. It's better this time. yeah, different laws, but say, new cult.
new culture strapped.
I have another podcast which is infinitely more pointless called What the Fuck is Happening in Tsubasa Chronicle. I read Tsubasa Chronicle to myself and then I talk about something afterwards, like Sanrio boys or different types of recorders or like why the monarchy is bad.
Hell yeah. I need to catch you up.
Hell yeah. It's not interesting. It's not a good podcast. I don't think you should.
I did listen. I listened to the first episode, but I was like really stoned, so it was hard to follow.
This is a podcast that you should listen to while you're stoned, I think.
Okay.
That's the ideal situation.
All right, I'm going to go munch an edible and listen to What the Fuck's Happening in Tsubasa Chronicles.
Great. I'm so glad. Thanks. That's my recommendation. Do I have any other podcasts?
I think you've only got three. University?
Yeah, you should listen to Juniversity, which I'm trying to get Josie to do with
Unless
me,
you're racist.
Still.
Then leave it alone.
Yeah, and if you're racist, don't listen to it. But if you're not racist, then you should listen to it.
Shit,
to
just realizing we got racist. Five episodes into this podcast without saying racists don't listen.
They should know.
They should know.
They should know. Yeah, and then also I have my games up at frizoid.itch.io. I read the text again recently for Oops All Jokers, which is a game that I wrote that I actually really like. It's about being the Joker and trying to change society via the means of a Joker's trick, which is the best way to do it.
Hey Ray, can I pitch you something on the pod right now?
What if we
do a sequel to Oops All Jokers that's a good society hack called we live in a good society.
Yes. That's great.
I've had that one brewing in the back of my mind for a while now.
Thank you so much for using it here. I feel so blessed and honored.
No trouble.
We live in a good society. So good. Those are all my plugs.
All I'm saying is there are a lot of expansion packs for that game. We could easily do a Joker expansion for the good society.
Oh my god. Yes. Fuck yeah. Great. That's my plugs. Done, I think.
Okay. My plugs. You can find me on Twitter at More Guillotines. You can find my Pro Wrestling Noah podcast at 2x2cast. That's 2x2, that kind of bye. And what else should I plug? Do you know what? I'm going to plug on this podcast because I forgot to bring it up for the past two episodes of 2x2, but and so has my co-host Envy.
Whoops.
But they put out a game recently.
Yeah, I saw that.
Called Born to Run, based on the Bruce Springsteen album. Unfortunately, the release was timed very close to Bruce Springsteen's podcast with Obama being announced.
I remember this. Very funny.
But
betrayed by Bruce Springsteen.
Yeah, betrayed by the boss yet again. Damn, we should have just listened when he told us he was the boss, I guess. No, but yeah, it's a very cool, interesting little game. I haven't played it yet, but I definitely recommend, because, you know, I haven't played it. It's hard to organize games, but
it is.
It's very cool. I recommend people go look at it, buy it if you can, and look forward to me writing a Fleetwood Mac hack of it.
Fuck yeah. I really miss playing TRPGs, AJ.
Me too. Really, let's play more.
We should play some when we're not fucking dying.
You know what we should do next time we're having trouble reading? We should just get on and do a little one-shot actual play. Just do a little one-shot actual play for, like, spin-off series that we put on the feed when we can't read.
All right. Great. Sounds good. That won't be time-consuming.
Not at all.
I love it.
I'll just need to find as many two-player games as I can and put them in a big folder. And
hell yeah. Well, I'm writing some, so it's no worries. Yes. good.
I think that's it.
What else? That's it. Great. We're allowed to have thoughts.
Oh, go watch my partner Darcy stream on Twitch at Aquaqueer.
Yes. Yes.
Twitch.tv/Aquaqueer.
To my web browser.
They've been playing Spelunky and Sims and a lot of other fun stuff and having a good time.
Aww.
I don't watch them that much, so I should at least point people in the direction.
Yeah.
Stream, it takes a lot out of me to watch live streams.
Yeah, I find it very difficult, but it's nice to have one in the background if I'm not doing anything. Fun times.
Fun times.
I think that's an episode. Okay, I'm going to stop my
recording. Okay, fair enough. I was just going to say we're allowed to have thoughts one last time since that's our sign off, but I've said it now. And music.